Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Jinx, Felipe Leon. I think Felipe is off right now. He's in the restroom, so he is on the show. Are you back, Felipe? He's giving birth to everybody. He's giving birth to other little fellow brown Mexicans. So he'll be back. He'll be on the show right now. But we got a lot to talk about here. Some news that came up this week. You know, I guess, you know, you know, if you don't follow boxing, there's no reason for you to be tuning in to Leaving the Ring. But, of course, you follow boxing. That's why you guys are on. So we all know about the report about Sergey Kovalev's head trainer, John David Jackson, who has been allegedly accused of trying to jump ship, trying to jump over to the Oakland side with Andre Ward and Virgil Hunter. So we're going to get into that in our rundown. Miguel Cotto signs a multi-deal with Oscar De La Hoya Golden Boy Promotions. So that's pretty interesting. And then there's the rumor that there might be a showdown between Miguel Cotto and David Lemieux, being that Miguel Cotto gets past Kamagai, which is going to be at the StubHub on August 26th. So some interesting stuff here to talk about. Obviously, Errol Spence is the hot topic for today's show. This past weekend, we saw the welterweight sensation go across the pond to face Kell Brook, a gaming Kell Brook. So just waiting for Felipe here so he can start reading down this rundown. If you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. Get your tweets in. Tweet us what you want. And we'll try to answer as with the, you know, as best we could. If you haven't yet, follow us on Patreon and contribute to the show. I want to thank everybody so far that's been contributing to the show with a dollar or 10 or 20 bucks. Very humble about that, you know, people that are donating to keep us, you know, keep this wheel, you know, turning. So thank you very much with the Patreon donations. So that is definitely helping us out here on the Leaving the Ring Network. You know, I know we haven't been doing any other shows yet. We just trying to gather up enough content and trying to get some things rolling. I'm working on a new site because some folks have been hitting me up on the Leaving the Ring Gmail. They're like, what happened to the Leaving the Ring radio site? And I pulled it down because I honestly was having a lot of problems with GoDaddy. So there was things I couldn't do on there. I couldn't get back into my website. They wanted a shitload of money for me to get in it after I already had paid them a pretty good significant amount to those bastards. So F GoDaddy, I went off with somebody else. So we're now rebuilding the website, which is going to be more of a podcast website. So you're able to see all the podcasts that we host under the banner of Leaving the Ring Network. So, you know, that should be fun and different. Damn, Felipe, are you there? Can you hear him in the background? Watch. You're going to hear it flush. Well, I got to say this really quick. Going into about Kell Brook, the moment Felipe said, I'm picking Kell Brook to win the unanimous decision, I literally felt it in my heart, and I felt bad for Kell Brook because the Jinx picked him. I mean, we know what happens when the Jinx picks anybody. The route doesn't seem to be very smooth. Right?
Thanks for holding the fort down for me, David.
Did you relieve yourself?
Oh, I dropped little David. I dropped the little David in the pool. Thank you. But thanks for holding the fort down for me. And you can move along now. Move along.
So let's get into the rundown here, Felipe.
All right, the rundown for today, Wednesday, May the 31st, here on the Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Felipe Leon, with my co-host David 97 Ruff Duenas. Errol Spence Jr. did this past Saturday night what many have not been able to do, and is to go across the pond to England and win a world title. The last time that was done was about 10 years ago, And I believe it was Tim Bradley Jr. beating Junior Witter for the WBC Junior Welterweight title. But this past Saturday night from Sheffield, England, Spence Jr. defeated Kell Brook via an 11th round TKO to capture the IBF Welterweight title. Spence Jr. was the number one mandatory to Kell Brook. The fight was broadcast live in the U.S. on Showtime.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that what you mentioned right now about the last person that went across the pond to try to get a world title was Timothy Bradley. And something that was interesting that Gabriel Montoya, who's one of the hosts of The Next Round, tweeted out on his Twitter handle that something that none of the other, like Floyd Mayweather or Andre Ward or Roy Jones, never decided to do in their boxing career. Obviously, Ward is still up and running in his career, but it is something that was to put to note that, yeah, these guys didn't, you know, decide to travel, you know, across to the UK to try to fight one of the world champions to take that title away from them on their stomping grounds. And Errol Spence, by whether it was by design or not, that was a brave move for him to do, which was to go over there because, obviously, you know, the favorite is going to be Kell Brook. But there was no worries at the end of the fight because it did stop at a TKO, the eye socket of Kell Brook, again, which was damaged by Gennady Golovkin, shut down on him. And we saw what happened.
Well, no, it wasn't the same one. It was the other eye.
Oh, was it the other eye? Oh, my bad.
Yes.
Oh, wow. This guy, I mean, you know what? Here's the thing, dude. I don't know what you think, but immediately I saw when he took that knee, I fell for him because I'm like, dude, this guy's taking a beating. But he was game from the first round. I mean, he really put Spence to test. And finding out what Spence was all about, I think even Spence was surprised in how much he had to dig to get that TKO, to you know, keep himself in that fight, because there was a few times he was pushed back, a few times he was hurt, right? But immediately that he was hurt, I got to say, I love the fact that he almost kind of reminded me with the temperament of Eric Morales. You know, like Eric Morales, when you hurt Eric, he would come back with a flurry, you know what I mean, to try to win back what he lost, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Spence do that. When Kell Brook landed a big right hand or a good left hook or something good that was, you know, that had the crowd roaring, Spence erased all that. He shut the crowd down by attacking back, and it worked for him. He did a lot of, he did a lot of things in there that was very good. Going to the body shot, you know, going to the body was a great investment. It proved, you know, for the later rounds. But it also shows that he's got some power, because if you did that to the other eye, that's man, that's some good power that this kid is carrying. So, you know, rightfully so, this kid is the future for the welterweight division. But sad to see how many fans were really downing on Kell Brook. Felipe, I didn't understand that. They called him a quitter. Immediately, people were very upset that he took a knee and he decided not to come out on the ninth round. He decided to opt out of that and stay on the seat. And people were upset about that. Were you upset?
Was I upset that he quit, or was I upset that they were calling him a quitter?
Well, both.
No. I mean, I don't think he quit at all. I mean, this is a guy that obviously knows what this pain, what this eye issue feels like. I think that if he had never lived through that fight with Gennady Golovkin, then he might have stayed. He might have stayed in the fight, because even though it didn't look like he was getting hurt, it looked like he just couldn't see. And he did mention that in
right.
the post-fight interviews, is that it's not the fact that he was getting, you know, he was receiving a lot of some punishment. I wouldn't say a lot of punishment, but some punishment from Errol Spence. But it was more of an issue that he couldn't see well, that he saw two of Errol Spence's, and you don't know which of the two is actually throwing the punches. So I think that if he had never lived through the Gennady Golovkin fight, then he might have stayed in there and finished the fight. But because he knew what it felt like, and the doctor for the Gennady Golovkin eye injury had told him that if he would have stayed one more round, he probably would have lost his eyesight in that eye in the Golovkin fight, then that's play in your head. You know what? If I keep going and it hurts the same and it feels the same and I can't see the same way that I couldn't against Golovkin, and they told me if I went one more round then I wouldn't be able to see out of this eye, then I better just stop. You know. So, I mean, I asked this question yesterday on our Spanish language show, Boxeo Tijuana TV. You can find it every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Boxeo
Tijuana. Oh, my God, you shameless abbot. Okay, come on. What were you going to say?
I asked the same question, and it was, would you have thought any less of Antonio Margarito if he would have quit in the 10th or 11th round against Manny Pacquiao?
No, I wouldn't have.
Of course not.
Of course not.
Any fighter.
There are certain fighters that you definitely have to get upset about if they decide not to come out, which is like I'm trying to think of a fight right now where
my co-host Renzo Novara on Boxeo Tijuana TV every Tuesday, youtube.com/Boxeo Tijuana, 7 p.m. He did mention one when Victor Ortiz got stopped by, I think it was Marcos Maidana, when in the interview afterwards he said, hey, I'm not in this sport to get punched, or I'm not here to get hurt, or something to that effect. I don't deserve.
Exactly. He said,
yeah.
I don't deserve this type of punishment.
Exactly. So that is different than what Kell Brook did, don't you think?
Well, you know, I mean, look, we're gonna agree to disagree on that one there, because we could be on that all night here, going back and forth about that. But look, my thing is like if Kell Brook pulled a Peter McNeely. With Mike Tyson, remember, he just ran around. He wasn't even hurt, you know, or Bruce Sheldon, you know, act like he got hit with a good, perfectly timed uppercut or left hook and faked it. Then I would be upset. But we saw the visual effect of the transformation of Kell Brook's face. And whether or not he said he was hurt or he wasn't hurt, dude, he was hurt. I mean, he was blinking pretty heavily. You know, in the sixth and seventh round, you could see that his eye vision was, you know, troubled. You know, he was rubbing it with his glove. So I don't blame the guy, because like you said, with Gennady Golovkin, the doctor had told him if he would have won another round, he could have lost it. So obviously that was a mental part in his head playing when he took that knee. And it's almost like he's reliving that first fight with Triple G. That he's like, oh shit, I'm going through this again, you know, and so when I hear people say, well, he's a quitter, that didn't even cross my mind. What crossed my mind was, wow, this guy's taking a really bad beating. His eye looks really, really bad. Either his team's gonna have to jump, and we mentioned that. Remember, last week. I said, you know, I don't think Spence could get the KO. If anything, the corner will probably stop it. Well, it turned out to be himself, the fighter, Kell Brook, decided to stop this fight. And rightfully so, he has every right, because it's his body, his health, that's in that ring. So I don't understand why folks are putting him on the quitter list. He's not a quitter. I mean, he fought two brave, tremendous fights back-to-back with Triple G and now with, Errol Spence. So kudos to the kid. Now he should get something a bit softer, which is the touch of Amir Khan, who doesn't punch very soft. He's a, you know, speedy hand, but now it makes the fight. I don't know. Somebody told me on the Leaving the Ring email, I got to ask you this. Does it make it less interesting to see that you have a Brook that's kind of a damaged goods, well, as Amir Khan is a catch him and he's lights out fight? Is it still interesting to you?
It might make it more competitive, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, I think it's a competitive fight. I think now Kell Brook is both of them are in a spot where they need each other. You know, before it was Amir Khan maybe saying, hey, you know, I'm never going to give you this fight. You're not at my level. And then when Khan got knocked out by Canelo, it was Brook saying no. And now they both need each other. They need this fight because the winner's going to move on to slightly bigger things, and the loser might be thinking about retirement, but it's against a big name. It's against it's basically like a crossroads fight, but at a way bigger level where they're going to make a good chunk of change. Usually these crossroads fights, and we might talk about one later on. You know, they tend to be not so high profile, but this one is going to be high profile, especially in England. And I'm sure that the United States market is going to be very interested in it as well. So it's a good fight for both of them now at this point.
You know, for Kell Brook and Amir Khan, if the fight is signed and it's sealed and it's ready to be delivered, I mean, I think it does tremendous numbers still in the UK. And that's the place that should be at. I'm wondering if Amir Khan, though, is going to want to live up to that and going back to the UK to fight Kell Brook, because he's made his home here in the States, and Amir Khan is trying to cross over as a USA star, but it just hasn't worked for him. So let me ask you, Felipe, do you think he would opt not to go back to the UK to fight? Because I don't think he has a choice.
That fight doesn't make sense in the United States.
Here in the U.S.
Yeah, it makes no sense. It makes no sense. I mean, they could have 30, 40, 50,000 at a stadium in the U.K., whereas here you might get 10,000, if that, anywhere, in Vegas, in L.A.,
I don't even think they'll get 10, because Kell Brook and Amir Khan don't have a massive fan base here in the States. And Amir Khan has got to wake up to that. He's not that popular here.
And it would be just ridiculous to expect the English fight fans to travel to the United States to see two English fighters face each other. So it just makes complete no sense to have that fight in the United States.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just, yeah. Hopefully Amir Khan understands that he's got to go back home in order to get this big payday and a big fight. It is a big fight. I'm still thinking it is a big fight. I mean, are UK fans, for leaving the ring, you got to let us know. What do you guys think? You guys think it's a big fight? I still do, because I think the leveling playing ground has been leveled for both men. They both come in with very questionable things because of their past fights. Let's continue on here on the rundown here, Felipe.
Let's see here. Reports came out this week where longtime Sergey Kovalev trainer. Is it Sergey or Sergey? Sergey. I don't know why I'm asking you, but I'm trying to debate whether it's Sergey or – I think it's Sergey. Sergey Kovalev. Longtime Sergey Kovalev trainer John David Jackson allegedly tried to change teams and joined Virgil Hunter in training Andre Ward in a supporting role. The point of contention is whether Team Ward contacted Jackson or did he make the initial call to Team Ward. I think this is very interesting. And I haven't had a chance to watch the Radio Raheem interview. Did you get a chance to see it?
Yes, I tweeted it out yesterday. I thought that Radio Raheem cleared up a lot of, assumptions of what was going on between the two with John David Jackson and Ward team. And we talked a little bit about this today in the morning. And mm-hmm. I think we're all both on the same page here is that this is Ward's way of getting into Kovalev's head. The way he did it with not doing the face-off at HBO after the Canelo and Chavez fight, how he left home, having everything set up. HBO was ready to record their face-off with each other, and Ward opted out to say, nope, going home, going back to the Bay. And he did so. I think this is another one of his tactics here, is to really get in the head of Sergey Kovalev, the crusher. So you know, when he did the HBO thing, I said, I just think that he's just trying to get, he really doesn't like Kovalev, and he's trying everything in the book to get in the mind of this guy, get him off of his game plan, and make Kovalev once again, headhunt, be a headhunter, not be a complete fighter, because Kovalev made that fight so close. In a lot of folks' eyes, and even with me, I mean, the mistake that I saw that he did was he started a headhunt and he stuck to that game plan. He didn't divert from it. He didn't decide to mix up some body shots. He decided just to try to get Andre Ward out of the ring, which was a terrible plan. It didn't work out, and that's why we ended up with a very controversial outcome. So Ward, I think, is doing a fantastic job into making Kovalev believe that John David Jackson made a call to them stating that he was not happy with Sergey and wanted to jump ship and go to Oakland and be the second voice to Andre Ward along the side of Virgil Hunter. We both know that wasn't going to happen. That just made no sense for them to for John David Jackson to even try to do that, you know? So,
but in that interview, did he admit that he had a conversation with them regarding changing?
Yes. He said that there was a conversation, but who initiated the conversation was the Andre Ward camp. They made the phone call, and you know, immediately when Radio Raheem asked him about the allegations, he said, "I guess, you know," he goes, "Well, you know, Ward's team threw me under the bus. They made the call to me. They asked me, and that's basically where it comes from." And you know what? That makes total sense. That makes a lot of sense because the.
There's one thing about having a conversation. It's another thing to actually, you know, like they stated, actually, John David Jackson naming a price. Did he admit to naming a price?
You know what? I'll have to go back to that, to the interview. I don't remember him saying that. But but I mean, you know, like I said, the implant is to put in Kovalev's head that your trainer is not completely loyal to you. And that's something that John David Jackson said in the interview. I'm loyal. I'm very loyal to the Crusher. I'm sticking with the Crusher. This is where my flag is going to be stamped. It's going to stand here in the Kovalev team. So, you know, the thing with Ward, because some folks were like, well, that makes no sense. Like, why would he do that? Well, he's taking a page off of Floyd Mayweather. I mean, Floyd has done that. You know, he's kind of got into he tries every angle to get into the heads of his opponent. Remember, Marcos Madonna and Robert Garcia, he invited the older brother to be there ringside for the rematch. So there's tactics that fighters tend to do. Is it dirty? But it may be, but it's fair game in my opinion. And it was a smart move. What do you think, Felipe? I thought it was a smart move for him to do, to try to get in the head of Kovalev and say, hey, your team is not as loyal as you think they are.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of things going on. You know, and it's not the first time that a fighter tries to get in the head and use less than clean tactics to get that. You know, I've heard stories. Actually, there's a fighter here in Tijuana, a two-time world champion back in the 80s, Raul Jibaro Perez, who fought all over the place. And he told me that they used to call his room at two or three in the morning and just hang up or keep calling and don't let him sleep and not let him sleep, you know, the day before the fight or and things like
what
that. So, yeah. So it all worked. It got to the point where he would switch rooms with somebody in his team because that way they would think that he was in one room and he was in the other room. So, you know, it's always happened. There's different stories of things. You know, I've heard other stories where when you go fight in a different country, they go pick you up at the airport. And instead of taking you to the hotel immediately, they give you this big run around, a tour of the city and you know, try to show you the sights and things like that. They got you in the car for 5-6 hours. So by the time you get to the hotel, you're exhausted, things like that. So it's not shocking. This is a little bit of a higher level of trying to get in the guy's head. And I mean, that's a theory. You know, we don't know that for a fact that this is what Team Ward is trying to do. It's just a theory. The conspiracy theory David Mel Gibson Duenas over here came up with. But, you know, I think where there's smoke, there's fire, you know. So who knows? I mean, there's a lot of reasons why John David Jackson.
Well, there certainly was after you used the toilet.
Well, that's a different story. But there will be, you know, John David Jackson, you know, we all heard and seen the things that Sergey Kovalev has said on Twitter. You know, some very, I would say controversial, but also in bad taste.
Edgy. Right. Edgy stuff. Yes.
Edgy stuff that he's done. You know, there's rumors, there's stories that he has added a strength and conditioning coach who might be a little bit more than that to his team and things like that. So, where there's smoke, there's fire. There may be an issue that John David Jackson doesn't really feel all that much in control of the camp and the team. Maybe he's uncomfortable, and maybe, you know, he did talk to Team Ward. To me, it's more of a question of who initiated those talks. If it was him, then, you know, that says something. If it was Ward, Team Ward, and they just talked, and like I said in that Rick Reno piece where the manager of Andre Ward also knows David Jackson very well, and they actually work together with another fighter, then it's just a phone call. Hey, you know, what do you think about Andre Ward and coming with us? And it's just a conversation, you know, and obviously he could have been saying no, no, no the whole time, but the way that Team Ward, you know, told the story, it was completely different. So,
well,
you know, we'll
I like the spin. You know, the thing that I like the spin that Team Ward was trying to do was that, you know, that the reason why John David Jackson wanted to jump ship is because he felt there was no respect from Kovalev to him. That Kovalev wanted to surround himself with merely just Russians, which I found kind of stupid because, you know, why wouldn't Sergey want to surround himself with familiar faces? I mean, you know, Mexican fighters do it. Puerto Rican fighters do it. Black fighters do it. They surround themselves with the people that they're more familiar with and comfortable with. So it's no surprise to me that, you know, Kovalev is thinking, hey, I need to bring in some more Russians, you know, help me out. It might help them relax. It might make them – there's a, you know, fighters have trust issues. Am I wrong or right, Felipe? Fighters have trust issues. They need to have – to feel complete, they have to be able to trust everybody that's around them, you know, to keep their mind cleared. So I think that's what Kovalev's at. So, yeah, it might not be completely comfortable for John David Jackson, but it's not about Jackson. It's about the fighter.
Yeah, I understand. But, I mean, you know, you could have people around you. They don't necessarily have to be part of your team. You know, they don't necessarily have to be working with you or being part of your corner. You know, I mean, that story is as old as –
but there's a language barrier. Here's the thing, though. If there's
itself.
A language barrier, I can understand where Kovalev, it probably feels – he look, because, you know, his
– It doesn't look like that much of a language barrier. It looks like Sergey has – a pretty good command
of the
English
language. Listen, the strength and conditioning coach, obviously he wasn't happy with. He felt tired. He lost energy on the late rounds. And this is the reason there was a change. They brought in a Russian that was a strength and conditioning coach. What I'm saying that if there is a language barrier, if there is anything that, you know, because, yeah, I know, you know, Sergey's, you know, his English is getting better, but still, I don't think it's to the point where he's going to grasp everything right away. You know, he's going to be able to understand everything all the way. I just don't see that. So
he had an interview with Steve Kim, and there was no translator, and it was perfectly fine. You could understand everything that he was saying. I think that's a poor excuse.
I'm not saying – I'm just saying that could be one of his reasonings of saying, this is why I'm clearing out other folks that I'm bringing in a Russian strength and conditioning coach.
Now, the question is going to be this. The question is going to be whether he wins or loses his next fight against Andre Ward, which is going to be in a couple weeks, if John David Jackson stays part of the team. And if he doesn't...
That's going to be... Yes.
And if he doesn't,
I agree with you.
then that's when we're going to hear the real story. Because John David Jackson, I'm sure he's going to come out with it.
Oh, yeah. He'll spill the beans. Big time. You know? There won't be assumptions anymore. The cat will be out of the bag. Let's patch in a fight fan here. I'll leave it in really quick before we continue on our rundown. Let's go with area code 209. You're on live right now. Leave it in the ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing good, brother.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hey, man. I just want to let you know that last week was the first time I heard you guys' radio station, and it was pretty good, man. It was hella funny. I was out there doing yard work, man, and I couldn't stop laughing, man, to the point to where now I'm going to start listening to you guys.
Oh, right on, brother. Thank you very much. I know. I'm the funny guy. I'm the funny guy.
No, actually,
I have to help him out.
No.
I always have to help him.
Shut
up, Felipe. Let me talk.
You're
he
the
called
funny
me. He wanted to talk to the funny guy, Felipe. He's calling me because he wants to talk. Sit.
Wait. What was your name, sir? I'm sorry. What was your name?
Troy.
Troy, if you really want to have a good laugh, check out the Leave It in the Ring Twitter account and look for a picture of David, and then you're really going to be laughing.
No. Troy, you want a good laugh, you have to check out the track record of Felipe picking fights. That is very laughable. It's very sad. Bigly. It's bigly sad there, Felipe.
Let the man talk.
Okay.
Hey,
I want to talk about the Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev promotion. You know what? In all honesty, if there was no talk about the trainer leaving to go back to Andre Ward or whatever, I mean, I would have completely forgot about that fight. And it's not that I'm a casual fight fan. I mean, I watch boxing every weekend, but there's just
right.
no buzz about that. There's absolutely nothing. I mean, after they announced Triple G and Canelo, man, like that split second, I forgot about that fight. I mean, really did. Right now, my mind is focused on September, you know?
Right.
And I guess what I'm trying to say is they need to do something. Somebody from Team Ward needs to go on a microphone and start, you know, throwing the middle finger at Sergey or something, just something, anything, you know?
You know,
I don't know. Go ahead.
Rock Nation was, if I remember correct, Felipe, correct me if I'm wrong here. Rock Nation.
You're probably wrong.
In order to make that fight, Rock Nation needed to have complete control. So Main Events and Kathy Duva really had to step out to the sidelines and allow them to drive the vehicle. And it just proves that Rock Nation they don't know what they're doing. I don't know what they think. I think they're delusional believing that Andre Ward is this international star and that people are clamoring to watch this kid, you know, and it's not true and it's not there. So they kind of banked on this rematch. The controversial decision was going to make the big draw and the big push. But, you know, it's noted as well with you not doing any promotional with HBO. You know, there is no buzz. So I agree with you. The buzz has been very, very poor. And the only people that have been keeping this fight in the ears of fight fans is the controversial back and forth between the two. That's about it, though.
You do,
well, yeah.
But
it's something, you know. And I'll be honest with you, I'm an Andre Ward fan. I really am. And when I saw him fight Sergey Kovalev, I was happy he won. But at the same time, I'm like, okay, well, he got his ass kicked the first 6 rounds, and after that, he didn't get his ass kicked as much, you know. And I'm an Andre Ward fan, and I was actually looking forward to this, but there's like nothing. They're not even making it juicy, you know. Oh well.
Yeah, you know. Look, I'm from the Bay. I'm from San Jose. I followed Andre Ward from the Olympics. I've watched him. I followed him to the Shark Tank at the HP Pavilion. The one thing that I've seen from Andre Ward from the beginning of his career is that he doesn't know how he just doesn't know how to be a walking promotional guy. He just doesn't know how to push himself out there. He doesn't know how to bring in new fans. What he tries to do is just kind of use the fact that he's the gold medalist. I'm the last gold medalist, and you should watch me. Period. And that's just not enough. That's not enough for fight fans. So, yeah, it sucks to see that he's not getting the recognition. But the only person that Andre Ward can blame is himself. That's it.
Yeah, I got to agree with that.
You know?
Well, one thing that I found interesting is that, that face-off, you know, I'm pretty sure that HBO was going to put the bill for that production of doing that face-off, and it was going to be on that Sunday of the Canelo Chavez Jr. Weekend in Las Vegas.
Right.
But the 24/7, actually, the promoter puts the bill for that 24/7 or a large part of it. And as we all know, you know, we never seen one for them, for Andre Ward or Sergey Kovalev. So Rock Nation is not spending that money. You know, if anything, the Rock Nation has probably lost money in their boxing endeavor, you know, so they're not going to put any more money. You know, there's a thing, you don't throw a good money after bad. And I think that they're ready to pull the plug on this. They already got rid of their biggest star, which was Miguel Cotto, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. And, you know, they're really not doing that much of a promotion for this one. I think they just want to get it over with, and then I don't think we're going to see – I don't think Rock Nation is going to see the end of 2017 in the boxing world.
How do you get fired on your day off, Craig? That's what I want to know with Rock Nation. Like, seriously, you have Miguel Cotto, who has a large fan base. He's the easiest guy, I would have to say, to promote, Felipe. How do you lose that guy? to Golden Boy. I mean, you had everything with the guy. Anyway, thanks for calling in, brother. We're gonna put you back on hold, brother. Appreciate the call.
All right, thanks, guys. I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, the thing about Miguel Cotto is that, yes, you're absolutely right. You're not right that many times, but this time you are absolutely right.
I'm always right, Felipe.
Miguel Cotto, you know, he should be a very easy guy to promote with his fan base and, you know, putting him in New York and Rock Nation being based out of New York. But I think that the one that got the better part of that deal was Miguel Cotto. You know, he was able to work out a great deal for them that at the end Rock Nation was not able to live up to their side of the deal, and that's why they had to let him go, because they realized that even though he has that great fan base and everything, it just wasn't economically feasible to pay him the amount.
Hear that long. Say that word again. Say that
Economically feasible. I know that. I mean, I wouldn't even dare to ask you to even spell that word. So
economically
let's leave it at that.
Physical. Hey, you always said physical at the end. Economically feasible. Well, I'm gonna tell you the problem with Rock Nation. Here's the thing that would happen with Rock Nation is that, you know, they fronted the money, but what they didn't have to front to Miguel Cotto is other fighters. And that's the one thing that a promotion group has to have. They have to have other fighters under their banner to serve whoever they're trying to build up. And if you don't have that, and you have to go off and venture to other promoters, well, obviously it could be a tug of war, because other promoters don't want to, you know, they don't want to have their fighter as the said opponent. So this is one of the reasons why Miguel Cotto jumped ship and decided to go with Golden Boy, because there are people there. You still got Canelo. Obviously, the rematch would be very intriguing. You got David Lemieux. There are other fighters out there that Miguel Cotto could get in the mix with, whether it's at junior middleweight or middleweight. So that's something that Rock Nation needs to wake up about and learn, is that the money is not everything if you don't have other fighters so that you're – sign fighter can dance with.
Exactly. Completely true. So moving on to Miguel Cotto, after announcing last week Miguel Cotto will be facing Japanese kamikaze Yoshihiro Kamigai in August in Los Angeles, today Golden Boy Promotions released a statement stating that Cotto has signed an exclusive multi-fight promotional contract with the company in hopes of securing a rematch with Saul Canelo Alvarez. My question here: didn't he say that 2017 was going to be his last year in boxing, and that and that he was done on December 31st, and now he's signing these multi-fight. So, I mean, a multi-fight could be as little as two fights. So it could be this fight and one more fight.
The multi-fight, see, this is what I read off the press release here, is that Miguel Cotto is obviously, he has his own promotional company, will be combining with Golden Boy and bringing some of his fighters to fight on ESPN dates.
It has to do more than just Miguel Cotto. So, you know, Cotto can retire this year, but then in the future his fighters will somewhat work with Golden Boy.
He wouldn't be able to retire this year because he's trying to bring on other fighters under his promotional band. And this is something that's kind of brilliant that Golden Boy has done in the past, which is Oscar De La Hoya, when he started up the Golden Boy Promotions, remember, he signed a pretty good lucrative deal with HBO, and the deal was that Oscar had a fight. And then slowly, Oscar was able to put Golden Boy fighters on those cards, on the undercards, and then start kind of introducing them to HBO. So, you know, this is what Golden Boy doing with Miguel Cotto is by, hey, if you want to bring other fighters, the attraction to get the eyes to notice these fighters is for you to continue to fight. Those guys will bring them on the undercard as well as ESPN. They noted out there, they put out there that Puerto Rico hasn't had an ESPN card out there for, I can't remember how many years or whatever. So they're taking ESPN boxing to the island, which is a great, fantastic move, because it's going to also produce young eyes to go and attend the event. And that's how we get fighters to be attracted to walk in the gyms. So this is a brilliant move by both guys. So,
well, don't hold your breath. Because you know it's
that's what they're planning. That's the dream.
Cotto
right?
has a proven track record of whatever he's touching, whatever he touches,
right.
really doesn't pan out. I mean, it happened with Top Rank. It happened with Roc Nation. And now he's signing to Golden Boy. So, you know, they got lofty dreams and you know, they got big plans. But don't hold your breath.
You know,
because
here's the thing. And I agree with you because a lot of fighters don't understand the way to run a promotional company. It's a lot of work. It's very tiresome. You know, there's a lot of money that's going to have to be put out there. There's a lot of your time, a lot of cold calls. You know, you know this, you know, you've stood and sat next to promoters. And, you know, we understand this. And a lot of fighters think that all they need to do is bring their name. And if their name's big enough, that's going to bring the people. That's not the way it works. They don't understand the, you know, the strategic plan to get people to come, to get your promotional company to be a top name where networks want to get in bed with you. So Miguel Cotto may be in for a rude awakening or not, or he may allow Golden Boy to run their vehicle. But at the same time, he's got to be aware that if Golden Boy's doing it, Golden Boy's going to be doing it in Golden Boy's best interest.
Well, one thing that Cotto has working for his favor is his team. I think his right-hand man is his last name is Perez. What's his first name? His buddy, the guy who was laying in bed, with that one time.
They called him.
On that 24th.
They call him Fat Man. What they call him,
he's
Fat
not,
Man or something like that.
He's not a
he's
big
not
guy
fat
anymore,
no
though.
He lost all of that.
Anyway,
yeah.
he has that guy. He has a couple other guys that seem to know what they're doing.
Brandon, is it Brandon Perez?
Brandon, yeah, Brandon Perez. There you go.
Okay.
And then same thing with Golden Boy. You know, if Golden Boy was only on the shoulders of Oscar De La Hoya, then that company would have folded a long time ago.
Right.
But at one point, you know, he had Richard Schaefer, who, despite everything, he is a savvy businessman, perhaps too savvy, where he was doing some shady stuff. But then you also have the likes of Eric Gomez, a gentleman that Oscar De La Hoya has known practically his whole life. So if there's anybody that Oscar trusts in this world, is Eric Gomez, and then a couple other guys like Robert Diaz and some other people. So when you get a good team, when you're able to assemble a good team and they have the same vision as you do, then you're able to do the right things. And I think if Miguel Cotto has that, at least with his with Brandon Perez, who is his best friend, maybe they could put something together as well in Puerto Rico and in the United States.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think about the actual fight? Miguel Cotto, 154 pounds against Yoshihiro Kamigai. I mean, everything should point towards Miguel Cotto, but remember, Miguel Cotto is, what, 35, 36 years old? He's coming off nearly a two-year layoff. He hasn't fought since November, December.
And he doesn't handle pressure. Yeah, and he doesn't handle pressure very well. Throughout his whole career, we've seen – Kamigai is a pressure fighter.
And he's a big kid. He's a big guy.
Yes.
He's younger. He's fresher. He's been in some wars, but not as many as Miguel Cotto. And, you know, he's a big guy, bigger than Cotto. And in the pictures that I saw today from the press conference, which actually officially announced this fight, tickets on sale tomorrow, Kamigai looked bigger. Actually, Cotto is – how old is Cotto? He's actually 37. He's going to be 37 in October. So I think he has a fight in his hands. And you know, all this can go south if he ends up losing that fight, which could very much happen. You know, I don't think this is a walk in the park. I don't think this is a slam dunk for Miguel Cotto.
I don't think so either. But, you know, like you said, all corners are pointing at Miguel Cotto to win this fight. Why? He's the better boxer. When he gets on his toes, he's very elusive. He knows how to use the jab effectively. He knows how to go to the body. He knows how to slip punches. You know, Kamigai sometimes can be considered a one-trick pony, which is come forward and throw a lot of punches and absorb punishment to get his punches through. And he's become a fan favorite to watch. You know, that's why I actually like this fight here. But it can also become a Kamigai trying to find Cotto through the night, because like I said, Miguel Cotto does move very well. He still has, you know, fresh legs at whatever age he is, you know, mid 30s, but he still knows how, he still knows how to have good ring generalship, which is to avoid the onslaught that a bigger guy can come after. Because the thing about Kama Guy is that he doesn't use the jab a whole lot, and he's not the fastest fighter out there for Cotto to face, even though Margarito wasn't either, but Margarito was able to walk him down. That's something strongly that Kama Guy can do, and that's why I said, you know, Cotto, he doesn't do too well with pressure fighters, but seeing that, you know, he's been with Freddie Roach, he has been a little bit more mobile than the past. And I think he understands that he doesn't do well, so he moves a lot more than he had tend to in his earlier part of his career.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if I agree with you on the fresh legs. I think that Miguel Cotto, I mean, obviously in the beginning of his career and throughout his best time at welterweight, the peak of his career, which I believe was at welterweight, yeah, he was a great fighter, a great boxer, very mobile, great left hook to the body, very talented, a lot of skill. But I don't see that Miguel Cotto anymore. I mean, he looked good against Saul Canelo Alvarez. I think Canelo Alvarez, if he would have, you know, pressed the gas a little bit more, he would have probably got him out of there. But, you know, in traditional Saul Canelo Alvarez style, he didn't do that. He didn't put on the pressure. He didn't go for the knockout. So I don't know. I don't know what we can expect from Miguel Cotto, you know, after nearly 2 years out of the ring, and then against a guy that's going to be, although 34 years old, fresher than him, and as I expect, bigger. So we're going to have to wait for August and see what happens. I'm really intrigued by this fight. I kind of want to see if I want to make the trip up there to StubHub, which is only a couple hours away, and checking it out live.
Same thing here. And then tickets, they did go up on sale. I think the highest is $200. I'm you know, I like the ticket pricing. So like I told you, and I said last week, I'm actually planning to go up there for August 26th to see this fight live, but as a to be in attendance, not to be covering the event. I don't really care to cover it. I just want to go out there and watch a good fight and hang out with folks.
I agree. That's going to be a good fight. Now, this past Saturday night in Ciudad Obregón, Mexico, Orlando City Salido came back after also a 15-month hiatus. He got off the canvas to stop late sub Aristides Perez from Colombia in the eighth round of a scheduled 10 in the lightweight division. Now it's almost a done deal for Salido to challenge Vasyl Lomachenko in the rematch later this summer. I actually was at this fight. You know, I spoke to Sean Gibbons, who is CD Salido's advisor, and I spoke to him actually before the fight, and he did mention to me that, you know, as long as CD Salido came up victorious and unscathed from this fight, that it was pretty much a done deal, that they had an agreement with Top Rank, that they had still not offered them a purse yet, but he was confident that it was going to be satisfactory and that they would probably see this fight in later on this summer. Now, as far as CD Salido, you know, I didn't see the best CD Salido out there. You know, he is coming off a long layoff. He was a little bit heavier than usual. Usually he fights at the 130-pound mark, and right now in this fight he was fighting closer to the lightweight division. The guy in front of him, although a late sub, he came in tough, you know. He came a little bit heavier, even though officially I was at the weigh-in. He got on the scale. The scale, it didn't move. He didn't, by the looks of what I saw, it didn't look like he made weight. But at that point, he showed up. He got to the town, to Ciudad Obregón, that morning, because I flew in from Mexico City at 6 in the morning. I had to fly from Tijuana to Mexico City and then Mexico City to Ciudad Obregón. And he was on my flight at 6:20 in the morning. To land in Ciudad Obregón at 7 local time. And I actually talked to him about that at the hotel, and he mentioned to me that he had actually flown in that night, that morning at 3 in the morning from Colombia. So he got to the airport, the Mexico City airport, at 3 in the morning, and then had to wait 3 hours to get on the plane to land in Ciudad Obregón, and then, you know, a couple hours later, weigh in. So it was a tough trip for him. So, you know, I think he did the best that he could, but Ciri Salido, being at home, was able to pull it off and stop him in the eighth round, and now we're going to have to see what happens with Lomachenko, which, for me, is like boxing.
What was your assessment? Let me ask you. What was your assessment of Salido? What did you think? Do you think this is now a much easier fight for Lomachenko?
Oh, yeah. I do. I think, unfortunately, I do. I think that Salido is going to do anything he can. He's going to go in there and give it the old college try. I mean, that's what Ciri Salido does. You know, he goes in there and he fights. It doesn't matter what happens. And I think that's what he's going to do. But his skills, I think, have diminished. Everything has diminished. You know, his strength, his stamina, his chin. I think this is boxing's version of that gold watch. You know, this is going to be that big payday where he could make some money before he rides into a sunset. Because just like Rock Nation, I don't think we see Ciri Salido in 2018.
I don't either. Witnessing him going down, where his opponent obviously could have got him out, but for some reason kind of backed off. You know, Ciri came back on and applied that pressure that we're used to seeing. But to me, it was a little bit of saving Ciri from not getting that big payday. And I think there was a big understanding about that from the other corner. He was there to be an opponent. He wasn't there to do the upset and take away the big money flow that's going to hopefully be down the road with the Lomachenko fight. Seeing that, what, like I said, with Ciri, God, I love the guy. Been a fan. Had him on the show numerous times. But, yeah, this is a cash and grab here for him. And rightfully so. He's going to make some big money, like you said. But I just don't see he has a prayer against Lomachenko. I see Lomachenko actually stopping him really early in the rounds. I would say mid-round, between 5 and 6, Lomachenko should be able to stop Ciri. There's too many miles on Ciri now. Just way too many miles on the guy.
Yeah, I agree. And then coming off the 15-month hiatus and all that, it's just, I don't think it's going to help. So hopefully we just get a good fight out of it. You know, Lomachenko wants to fight. He wants to avenge that one loss on his record. Obviously, Salido wants to fight, not only because of the money, but also I think he wants to prove that despite everything, he still can beat a Lomachenko. He still can beat a guy that has less than 10 fights under his belt. So, you know, it's just a matter of waiting and seeing what's going to happen. The another guy that I talked to while there was Juan Francisco El Gallito Estrada, who is waiting for an official date. It looks like he's going to be on the undercard of Juan Manuel Marquez, who is being talked about returning in August in Ciudad de Mexico in Mexico City at the new arena out there. And Juan Francisco Estrada will be the semi-main event to that. Now, he is officially, they have not told him that it would be against Carlos Cuadras. Officially, they have not told him it would not be against Carlos Cuadras. So he's still hoping that that fight can be made. But as of right now, as of last Saturday, he didn't know exactly who would be his opponent. He did mention that if it wasn't Carlos Cuadras, that it would be another fighter, but he would be returning in about August, hopefully on that Juan Manuel Marquez card.
Let's go to the tweets really quick by Tommy G. Wolves 202. Hey, guys, I got a question. Is there any truth to Dan Raphael's rumor of Cotto and David Lemieux happening in December? Well, here's the thing is that it was reported, I believe, by Radio Raheem again, that Miguel Cotto does have the date December 2nd reserved. So whoever his opponent is on December 2nd, we don't know. So that's a strong possibility the rumor might be true, but it all depends on how well Miguel Cotto does against Kamagai. Like I said, Kamagai is not a guy that you're going to have to look past. You got to look at him in front of you because he is going to come forward to try to take your head off. So Miguel Cotto's got a tall order in Kamagai, you know. So I think first that, and I'm not really sure, Felipe, if Miguel Cotto would want to go after or face David Lemieux. If he does have a hard fight with Kamagai, have a second hard fight with even a much harder guy in David Lemieux.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. I completely 100% agree with you. But if he expects to make the big money, he has to fight these kind of guys. He has to fight names, especially even Miguel Cotto against David Lemieux. That could be even a pay-per-view fight, you know? I mean,
I think what probably is going to happen is Kama Guy, I think the name that's kind of probably going to be trying to persuade to get in the ring on December 2nd still is Juanma Marquez. I think that Golden Boy is going to try to go for that before serving up Miguel Cotto to David Lemieux. Because to me, and I don't know what you think, but Miguel Cotto is the underdog. The favorite would be Lemieux in this fight.
I agree with you. And I think that, I mean, they have been saying some things about Juan Marquez. Marquez has actually shot back and said, hey, you need to worry about Kama Guy first before you even talk about me. And I think is an easier and more logical route for Miguel Cotto, because obviously Juan Manuel Marquez will bring in the huge Mexican audience that would make more sense financially. It would make it more financially feasible, so that way you could have a little you could talk about that word. And then also an easier fight, because Cotto's going to be the bigger guy. But it all depends if Cotto is willing to go down to welterweight, which I find it to be very, very difficult. And that's the only way that Juan Manuel Marquez said he was willing to fight Miguel Cotto, is if it's at the welterweight limit of 147 pounds.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Here, let's go here really quick, the fight schedule. I don't even think we put that on the rundown, but Saturday night, I believe, Saturday night, June 3rd at the Montreal Showtime, Anadonis Stevenson versus Andres Fonfara for a rematch, 12 rounds of boxing for Stevenson's WBC light heavyweight title. Let me hear your thoughts about this fight here, Felipe, and your jinx pick.
Actually,
what? You're going to pick Fonfara. Everybody, pick Stevenson.
Actually, Fonfara, I was just reading Fight News a little bit ago before the show started. Fonfara is listed as an 11-1 underdog. Do you think he's an 11-1 underdog? Yeah.
What? Are you serious? Yes. He's been more active than Stevenson. You know, I'm expecting Fonfara to maybe starch Stevenson and put him back to where he's been at, which is basically in retirement. The guy hasn't fought. He hasn't looked like he's been interested in fighting the best out there. He was going off a very good run, but when was that? Like, what, 3-4 years ago maybe? You know, when he was really getting fans happy to see if he would get in with Kovalev, but even with Pascal, and he just didn't do any of that. He opted out of being in any part of any of the big fights. I don't understand where would – I mean, it's obviously has to be – it's in Montreal, he's the favorite. So it's the fans out there that are putting the wage of money – thinking that Stevenson is going to be the winner. But I don't see that. Just because Fonfara, to me, has been more active. He's fought tougher fights right now. And he was in the Bay Area working out, I believe it. I think it was he working out at Victor Conte's gym?
Fonfara?
Yeah. I know he was out there and he was sparring with Andre Ward, helping him out, getting preparation for, you know, Kovalev. But, I mean, to me, he just seems like he's the more dialed-in fighter than Stevenson.
Well, I hate to do this to you, David, but I was going to pick Andres Fonfara because of all the reasons you just said, but, you know.
There you go. His official pick here. Everybody, Stevenson is going to win by knockout, man. But
I just don't think that Fonfara is an 11-1 underdog. So
I think that's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
But here's the other thing that I found interesting. Now that you brought up that fight, Stevenson keeps harping that he wants to target the winner of Ward Kovalev. Do you think that's even something that could be done? Forget the politics of boxing. Do you think he's really serious about getting that done?
God, I don't even know, because he hasn't been serious about his career. You know, you got Joe Smith out there who's going to be fighting Sully Barrera. That's a great fight. Mm-hmm. If anything, those two should have better rights of calling out Ward.
Well, not exactly.
And Kovalev.
Not exactly. The guy's a WBC champion. So, I mean, why would Joe Smith or Sullivan Barrera have more of a right to call him? They're not world champions. I mean,
yeah, I think – they're not world champions, but they're active and they're more fun to watch and they're actually willing to get in the ring. You know, with either one of the guys we just mentioned right now, whereas Stevenson, like you just said, is he being serious about this, or is he just flirting, you know, the idea, but he's not going to really make the move of going after the winner? It's hard to say with Stevenson, because to me, it seems like he's holding the WB strap hostage, doesn't want to let go of it.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, obviously, nobody wants to let go of the world title, but he is... You know, at the end of the day, the ones that are going to call out what he needs to do to continue to be world champion is the organization, in this case, the WBC. So if they're allowing him to, you know, fight once a year and still keep their title, then, you know, it is what it is. But I honestly think that he has the right to call out Ward or the winner of Ward or Kovalev more than Joe Smith or Sullivan
Barrera. Everybody has the right.
But, but who has first dibs at him? You know, who's first in line? And
right,
it
would
be
the man that holds the belt. Right, the man that's holding the title should be him.
But I don't know if that's something that he really wants to do. I mean, he's had his chance before against Sergey Kovalev. He's never really gone after the type of caliber of these fighters. And he's also, you know, he's up there. He's up there in age. And, you know, why even risk yourself if you don't have to? I mean, he makes really good money out there in Canada. He still has a WBC belt. Why not keep fighting out there in Quebec and not even worry about Kovalev and Ward and just keep doing your thing? He's 39 years old. It's just a way of him keeping his name in the news, because obviously, just like any other PBC fight.
Listen, first he's got to get past. Look, you're getting ahead of yourself here. First, he's got to get past Fonfara. I think that that's a tough assignment for him, even though he did get the win the first time. But this is a completely different fight, different fighter now, you know, where Fonfara has been active. He's had some losses down the way of getting this rematch again. But Stevenson does carry this explosive power, very awkward guy. But Fonfara, if he boxes and does very minimal mistakes, he could take this fight. And I'm with you on this one. I think I'm picking Fonfara for a win. I think that he should be able to pull it off. But the thing is, like, it's getting caught blind. You know, you can't take nothing away with Stevenson. The guy does carry power in those hands, and he can turn a fight. I mean, Stevenson is a fun guy to watch when he does fight, because he gets hurt. But he also could turn the fight around with one punch. And that's something that Fonfara has got to be careful with. He's got to keep his hands up high. And I think he could do it if he just does that. Keeps his hands up high and don't fall into something big that's coming from Stevenson. He's got to suck Stevenson in where he can counter Stevenson rather than going forward, because that's where Stevenson gets you. When you come forward and you're going in for the kill, he's able to catch you with one of his very awkward punches in the angles that he throws it.
Yeah, and that's what Fonfara. Okay.
Back in a fight fan here, leaving the ring really quick. Let's go. Area code 503. You're on live right now, leaving the ring. What's on your mind?
Yo, what up? What up, Felipe? What up, David Duenas? This is Josue calling from Portland, Oregon. What's up, guys?
What's going on, brother? How you doing, Josue?
Yo, doing good. Friday night fights and with a top rank on Unimas, you know, I don't know if you guys got a chance to see my boy Mike Alvarado get another win, you know, back in the winning column, and maybe a big fight lined up for you know, the end of the summer, maybe the early fall. So I mean, I'm just happy as a kid and like, you know, at a candy shop, because you know Mike Alvarado, man, you know, he's my favorite fighter, and he got the win. This is three wins in a row, baby. He put out Matthew Strode in the second round, knocked him out, and you know, I just can't be more proud. You know what I mean? Because that's my guy right there, man. And Just very proud of what Mike Alvarado did. We know, well, I know it was a chump, right? I know it was a, he was a bum. Let's face it, the guy he was fighting, I mean, the guy, I don't know if you guys got a chance to see it, but the guy had no damn chance in hell, but hey, at least he was in there.
What I was going to say right now? Josue, what I was going to say is that's actually a pick that Felipe would have got right. If he would have picked for Alvarado to win, right, Felipe? That's one that you would have gotten
right.
Strut? You would have jinxed it.
Did you pick Strut?
No, I didn't pick any of those two guys.
That's why Mike won, bro.
Let me ask you this. Your attempts to be funny is completely awful, David.
Oh, be quiet. Whatever.
Josue, let me ask you this.
Whatever.
So who now that you're saying that Mike Alvarado is ready for the big time, who would you want to see him against?
You know, I was thinking about that too, and him coming from 140, you know, he still has he still needs some time to adjust to 147. You know, Brandon Rios did give him a real ass whooping that last time, and in my opinion, I wouldn't mind seeing him, you know, against Matisse. You know, him just coming off a win and him actually just fighting at 147 and both fighters actually having the same style where they both come to fight, you know, they were both 140 career pounders, you know, both of them got a title at 140 and Matisse had, you know, I believe he had the WBC for a little bit and my boy Mike Alvarado had that WBO until he lost it up against, you know, the Russian in Provodnikov. So, that's a fight that if I was the matchmaker, you know, if I was the guy gonna tell what Mike Alvarado should do next is the Matisse fight, and that's just my opinion because you know Matisse just seems to be a little worn out, you know what I mean, Postal kind of gave him that whooping and he's got that bad eye too, you know, so both of their styles, you know, clash up perfectly to be a fight of the year, you know, and that would be my dream match right there is Lucas La Machina Matisse.
That's actually a fun fight. I like that.
You know, and they do. The only thing is, I don't see why it could not happen because Golden Boy and Top Rank do work together, and. Why not see it on the undercard of Golovkin and Canelo, which Golden Boy did say that Matisse will be coming back on that undercard. So that would be a great card for that pay-per-view undercard. I mean, that would be something for me will make it more enticing to pay for that pay-per-view if they announce that Matisse will be facing Mike Alvarado.
That would be sick, man. But
the comeback, so makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's just my opinion, man. I don't know, man. Mike Alvarado is just my really seriously, man. I'm not even joking, but he is my favorite fighter. Like him and Brandon Rios, like because of what they did, you know, for their first fight, just made me more into a bigger boxing fan that night. And I was just, you know, excited, and at that night, I was going for Brandon Rios, but Mike Alvarado, you know, showing his heart. You know, made me into a bigger fan of his. So, but yeah, that's just, you know, just to give you guys a little story of why Mike Alvarado, because everybody always says, like, why is Mike Alvarado your favorite fighter? Like, what's he been doing? You know, he's just getting high in Colorado, and, you know, but I don't know, man. He's just a really fan friendly fighter. That's why I love this guy. You know what I mean? He comes to fight, he's going to fight you. And it looks like he just got a new trainer, too. I don't know who that guy is, but I always remembered he had this white trainer with him all the time. But for this last fight, he had somebody else. So it just seems like he's in a better place. He's mentally in a better, you know, place. And I'm sure, you know, if you guys do follow him, he's talking about how he's doing this for his family now. And, you know, he's got like a little, a new baby born son that he's trying to be, you know, be an influence to. So, you know, and Mike Alvarado is a cool guy, man, and I've seen him in interviews and stuff like that. So he just seems kind of cool. Can I talk about the other fights too, like Michael Conlan and the rest of the weekend? Is that cool?
Yeah, go for it, man.
Oh, cool. So, you know, Michael Conlan, you know, the Irishman, you know, the second fight, you know, you know, the guy he fought, who was, you know, he was there to lose, man. Let's face it. They looked like they brought this guy from Tijuana or, you know, I don't know. They just, they're like, hey, man, put some gloves on. You know, put some gloves on, man. You're going to fight this guy. So, I thought, in my opinion, I thought it was fucking funny. That dude had no chance in hell, man. I mean, like, that dude... I just thought it was funny the guy is just, you know, complaining about back to the head shots and complaining that you know, that body shot that he got, he was complaining that it was like to the back of the back of him, like maybe a liver shot or something. He was just complaining too much about it, and I would have been just like, man, just take that knee and just, you know, take the ass whooping and, or, you know, just whatever, quit. But you know you're not going to get this win, man. I mean, it's Michael Conlan, man. This is the Michael Conlan show. And actually, and I wanted to talk to you guys about, you know, you guys, I'm, you know, you guys are, you know, Mexican like me, Spanish speakers, and I find it fascinating that, you know, that they have Michael Conlan on Unimax instead of maybe a Fox Deportes or a, you know, FS1 or, you know, something else. And do you guys, did like, in my opinion, like, I love it, dude. Like, I love that they're showcasing, you know, Michael Conlan and the Spanish network and, you know, the Spanish people that stay tuned on Unimax on Friday nights and, you know, get to know him. And, you know, he is from Ireland, but it's kind of cool that, you know, he's kind of getting, you know, the Mexicans or the Spanish folks are getting a chance to see him. And I just wanted to, what are your thoughts on that? Because I think that's a brilliant part in Bob Arum's, you know, work right there.
Well, that's his network deal with them. He doesn't have a network deal with Fox.
Yeah,
exactly. So that's the reason why he's on there. He doesn't have any other network deal with anybody, except for like HBO.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just to me, man, it's a beautiful move, man, because at least we get to see him, man. Because I don't want to see him on, like, you know, maybe, you know, I don't want to see him on other bunch of like. A bunch of other networks, you know, like always on ESPN, maybe one day on ESPN, the next week on, you know, whatever, or the one week on HBO. Like, I like that he's being only right now on Unimax, and because his pro debut was on Unimax, and actually,
right.
Since we're talking about Michael Conlan, that first pro debut, man, it had to be the very best pro debut anybody ever had, dude. I mean, like, the love that he had in New York, you know, the Irish fans, Conor McGregor
right.
being there, being on his side, and, you know, just it almost looked like, you know, if you guys used to follow WCW back in the day when, you know, they were big, like it kind of almost had that, you know, raw feeling like that, just gritty, you know, just like, you know,
right.
like, you know, backyard fighting kind of style to it. And it was just a very cool thing. And, but obviously this second pro did, you know, his second fight didn't really, it wasn't that spectacular with the fans being there. I think this fight did take place in Chicago, if I'm not mistaken. And I really wish the crowd was there, man. I really wish the crowd showed up because that was kind of a big arena for him, you know, for a second fight, you know, that was kind of a big arena for, you know, for a fight like that. But, you know, I wish that there was more love for this guy. And also I wanted to bring up Salido, the Salido, you know, him fighting on BN Sports, you know, this weekend. And, you know, I want to say, man, you know, take your money with Lomachenko and try to get the highest pay you can get for Lomachenko. And if you can't get it, you know, keep fighting other bumps until you get a big payday with Lomachenko. Because, man, I mean, Salido looked horrible in his last fight, man. And that's sad to say for me because I love Salido with all my heart, man. The fights that he's given us with Juan Manuel Lopez and going to Puerto Rico and taking care of business over there, you know, he looks awful, man. It's just and for a little bit, man, I'm not gonna lie, but the fight looked almost kind of fixed. Like it just didn't look right where
right.
He got hurt and then his opponent did not capitalize on finishing him, and you know, it was a very awkward, you know, just maybe I don't know, man, maybe I don't know, it taking place in Mexico too, you know, about it wouldn't be far so far from, you know, from that happening, being a fixed fight?
A fixed fight can happen anywhere. So it doesn't necessarily
right.
have to be in Mexico where a fixed fight can happen. But, you know,
His opponent though had that oh shit moment look in his face though when he did hurt Siri. You know what I mean? But yeah, it's a possibility. I mean, it's something that we can't deny. You know, I got a lot of emails about that too, and people, you know, even texts, and they're like, this looks fixed. But, you know, we try to hope that it isn't. But I'm with you. I agree with you all the way with Siri that he's ready to be served and, you know, and get that big payday and going into retirement after fighting Lomachenko. But, Josue, thank you for calling in, brother. We're going to put you back on hold, man. Appreciate the call.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you guys for having me on, man.
Thank you, Josue. Now, let me tell you this, though. It might not necessarily be – well, it has to be on HBO because I'm sure that –
with,
you know, there's
with
been
Lomachenko?
Talk, yeah, there's been talks and rumors and there's little whisperings here and there that Top Rank – is going to come up with something very, very new and something big in the boxing world as far as their fights on television. And, you know, I don't know if HBO would be all that interested in Vasyl Lomachenko against Siri Salido, especially if they see that performance of Siri Salido from this last weekend.
We're going to have something big, something new for boxing. For the Lomachenko and Salcido fight. What is that,
sure,
Bob? It's going to be on pay-per-view, Felipe. That's what it's going to be, big and something new.
Well, I mean, obviously, you're going to have to pay, you're gonna have to pay for it somewhere. But obviously,
right.
But I'm sure that HBO wants to stay in the Lomachenko business. So more than likely, we will see it on HBO. And rightfully so, because that's the only way that Salido can make the type of purse that he's probably going to want. I mean, let's not forget that only a couple of months ago when they were talking about making the fight, he was asking for $1 million. I don't think he's going to get $1 million, but he was asking for $1 million.
I don't see how they can even, I don't even know where they would get $1 million because it's not a high demand fight. It's just a redemption for Lomachenko because of the blemish on his record, being that Salcido beat him the first time. When he went to Lomachenko try to get that title. So, yeah,
now,
that's going to be interesting. Maybe 700,000, do you think?
Between 500 and 750, I think
yeah.
he's going to be end up getting. Now, another fight that's on the horizon that was also announced not too long ago, but it has been in the works, is the return of Brandon Rios. He's going to be fighting in June on a Sunday in Lancaster, California. Is Lancaster up by your neck of the woods?
It is, but it's not very close. It's not close by Modesto. I don't think so. I can look it up, but I don't think it is.
Yeah. Well, he's going to be coming back. He's going to be coming back against Mexican Aaron La Joya Herrera. And I think that is, that's going to be pretty good. Let's see what Brandon Rios has left in the tank. I think Aaron Herrera, if he is, training and he is ready for his fight, he could put up a little bit of a fight. Aaron Herrera is not, somebody for Brandon Rios to walk all over, and it all depends how well Brandon has been getting ready. We're going to see him with his new trainer, Ricky Funes. This is going to be the first fight, I think, with his new trainer. I think his dad's going to be working the corner as well. So
no, it's not
gonna...
in my neck of the woods. No, it's it's by Palmdale. So, you know, Bakersfield area.
Yeah. Like Palm Springs over there.
Yeah. No, not Palm Springs. Not Palm Springs. It's like I said, Bakersfield. There's another city called Palmdale or that's out there. I think like, I'm trying to remember. It's Andre Ward's cousin that lives there in that city. San Clarita is Simi Valley, you know, closer to Simi Valley. If you look at the map, but
it's going to be on a Sunday. It's going to be in that town, Lancaster, California, the Pioneer Event Center. Oh, I know where this is at. Pioneer Event Center. Yeah. That's where, Hervey Estrada has been doing some fights out there. And, that's the return of Brandon Rios. What do you think about that? Except for June 11th, which is not too far along.
Right.
It's like just about a week and a half.
About a week and a half. And, you know, the kid needed some rest time. And, I think it was, long overdue for him to rest that body because, one, he was struggling to make weight, which we know puts age on you, you know, age on your body. He was struggling with weight. He had been in a lot of wars already. So I wonder if the time off did him good, or are we just going to see the shop-worn Brandon Rios? So that's the only interest I do have of Brandon Rios. But I don't know. I'm not – I wouldn't say that I'm like, wow, he's back or anything like that at the moment until that first bell rings. I think the second, third round we'll find out whether or not if like I said, if time served him well. So
he hasn't fought since late 2015, so it has been a while.
Yeah, his last was Timothy Bradley stopped him, so that was the last time that we saw him. That was his outing. Real quick, it was good to see you on TV, Felipe, because I don't know if anybody knew this, but you were on the corner with Kenya Enriquez, right? And and she had a beautiful stoppage over her opponent to gain the WBC title. This is her second title that she got, right? For a flyweight. She's a flyweight now.
No, she was a junior. She won the WBC interim junior flyweight title with a third round stoppage of Mary Salinas this past Saturday night on the semi-main event of that Ciri Salido fight.
What a beautiful body shot. That was an awesome body shot, man. Wow. Yeah. You know,
and this is her second title. This is her second world title. Her first world title was the WBO flyweight title. So she actually went from flyweight to junior flyweight, which is not something you see very often. Usually when people win titles in multiple divisions, they're going up in weight. She's actually gone down in weight because junior flyweight is her natural weight class, and she only went up to flyweight for the opportunity to win that WBO world title. So now, as an interim world champion, she has to wait and see what is going to happen with the full-fledged champion. The full-fledged champion's name is Esmeralda Moreno. She just won the title last month, but she's part of the WBC Female Flyweight Tournament, which is coming to an end, maybe like in July or August. She's going to be facing the WBC – Esmeralda Moreno is going to be facing the WBC Flyweight Champion, Jessica La Kika Chavez, who is trained by Nacho Berenstain. And then it all depends what Esmeralda Moreno does in that fight. If she ends up winning and she ends up – and she decides to stay in the flyweight division, then Kenya will become the absolute WBC champion. If Esmeralda Moreno loses and she decides to come back to junior flyweight, then she would have to defend her title against Kenya Enriquez, the interim champion. But in the meantime, it looks like Kenya will be coming back in August here in her hometown of Tijuana and defending that interim title on the Azteca channel, just like she did on Saturday night.
Well, there you go. I mean, that was a beautiful body shot that she landed. She walked down Salinas, used her jab to, you know, timed it perfect. You know, overall, she has an A-plus in her performance and stuff. And fact, fans, if you want to see that fight, go ahead. I believe it's I can retweet it on my Twitter. But and then Felipe is on there. Like I said, you got to look really close though. Like I got a magnifying glass to see Felipe because he's so tiny. But there. It's not a little foot, you know, a little hair that you're gonna try to flick off your television. That's actually Felipe because he's got that beard, and that's all you can see is his big beard. You know, little legs, little arms, but a big old head and a big beard. Felipe Leon is right there.
Let's just say David froze the.
Oh,
the
look, we got to do the good, the bad, and the other.
The good. The bad. The ugly. Ugly. Ugly.
All right, well, we have the good, the bad, and the ugly. So the good here on Leaving the Ring for this week is Errol Spence Jr. His performance over Cal Brook proved that he is something special. He's actually fitting the bill that most folks have said in the past, that he's the future of the welterweight division, potential star. Now, whether or not he may be as big as, like, the likes of Floyd Mayweather is yet to be seen. I highly doubt that he'll get to that level in terms of money-wise, but promising by showing you know, by going overseas to face another champion, Kell Brook, and dismantling him the way he did, he showed there's a lot of promise and should be into talks of facing other champions like Keith Thurman to Danny Garcia and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The bad is Kell. Go ahead.
I was impressed by Errol Spence. I think that, you know, obviously, if you guys listened to the last show, I picked Kell Brook to win. I thought that his experience being in the hometown was going to be able to pull it off for him. It was.
His experience was
He was doing really well in the first half of the fight. But Spencer, you know, even though he didn't have that experience and maybe he had not faced guys of Kell Brook's caliber, he was able to, you know, weather the storm and then turn the tide on Kell Brook and end up, you know, stopping them in the 11th round. So, you know, I was very impressed by Errol Spence, and now I look forward to seeing who he faces in the welterweight division.
Yeah, already as soon as that fight had, you know, the fight was over with Kell Brook, immediately you saw in the social media world, folks, you know, saying hopefully he gets like Keith Thurman, Danny Garcia, Manny Pacquiao, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And hopefully he fights one more time this year, you know, before the year ends. So we'd like to see this kid get back in the ring immediately because he'll want to try to go off of the momentum of his big stoppage over Kell Brook. The thing that worries fans, and rightfully so, is the track record of Al Haymon and how he kind of backpedals, you know, when it comes to his fighters having a big win. He kind of tends to shelve them, put them back on the shelf. So let's hope he doesn't do that. Let's hope he's kind of learned his lesson from the past with his fighters like Danny Garcia and et cetera, and sees that Spence needs to be active in order to continue reeling in new fans and to make this kid a potential boxing star that Al Haymon Promotions needs. So here goes the bad. The bad is Kell Brook's eye. This could potentially end this you know, fighter's career. It may, you know, he was able to re-heal it and put a plate in his eye off of the Triple G fight, but this could something be very strong where he may consider retirement because, you know, that's something hard to recover all the time. I mean, mentally, you don't want to get hit again. You know, you're thinking about that while training. So right now, we're not really quite sure. I mean, I don't know what you think, Felipe, but I don't think right now he's quite sure whether he's going to make a comeback or not.
Yeah, I think that that he should weigh his options very, very carefully. I mean, obviously, he has to go up to the super welterweight division. I think the welterweight division is over. The 147-pound limit is over for Kell Brook. I think it made a difference in that fight. I think that he was a little bit listless. I think it didn't help the fact that coming down to the weight after fighting Golovkin at 160 pounds. And then the eye injury now, you know, it's the other eye. So now both of his eyes he's had issues with, you know. After all the talk with Margarito and he should retire and he shouldn't put that eye in danger, now we have a Kell Brook that now both of his eyes could be in danger. So I think that before he takes this next step and decides to return at 154 pounds, he should really weigh his options and see how serious this whole eye injury is.
Yeah, we wish him the best, you know. Hopefully it's a good recovery and, you know, whatever decision he decides to make is going to be the best decision for him, so more power to him. The ugly is the social media fans, how quickly they were labeling Kell Brook a quitter.
And it wasn't only fans, it was also fighters.
Oh, yeah, fighters as well. You know, you had I'm trying to remember what fighter.
Gervonta Davis, Amir Khan, Terrence Crawford.
Yeah.
I think that was it. A couple other guys were calling him a quitter and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
so
that was
wow.
You would think that these fighters would actually be more accepting of when a fighter decides to opt out to say, "Hey, you know what? I can't do this, so I'm gonna quit." You know, it reminds me when Robert the Ghost Guerrero got a really bad nasty cut in San Jose at the HP Pavilion. I'm trying to remember the guy. Who was it that he fought? I think he was a Indonesian fighter, and it was a really nasty.
I remember
and
that.
Yeah, you remember that? And the ref asked him, the doctor, and he told him, I can't see. He's like, I can't see. And so they stopped
him. He was losing that fight
as well.
He was losing that fight.
Yeah, he was. He was, you know, what the
fight, it was Daoud.
It was
Daoud.
What, three or four rounds?
Daoud Jordan. Second round.
Jordan. Yes, Jordan. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. So and fans immediately jumped all over him on that as well. So with Kell Brook, though, this was a much, well, I wouldn't say much more serious injury. I think any injury that's close around your eyes is pretty serious. But, you know, Kell Brook knows his body better than any of us. So for us to judge this guy who took on a very hard assignment in Errol Spence Jr., there is no question where his heart is at. He fought his ass off, and his experience was having its momentum. And he showed that if anything, if a guy was gonna quit, it would have been earlier in those rounds, not wait till your eyes busted and you can no longer see. You know, that's my opinion. But anyways, I think that's a big shame on fight fans and fighters that were putting this label quitter on Kell Brook. Anyways, fight fans, I think the only what? That was the ugly. Douchebag of the week. Probably would
I think
have
Leon,
to go to.
Leon lost it again. He has not turned himself in, so I think he deserves douchebag.
He did
of
agree,
the week.
Though. I saw somewhere that he did agree that he will be turning himself to the authorities. So, but I thought if anybody was going to get the title, it'd have to be Andre Ward's manager for releasing the story about John David Jackson and making it seem like it was John David Jackson that wanted to jump ship. I don't know. Who else would be out there that you think? Who else? Who's another name would we throw out there for our douchebag of the week in boxing?
I mean, I think that you win it every week without even trying. But besides you,
well,
I can't think of anybody else.
Yeah. So, there you go. So on the awards camp, you get douchebag of the week here on Leave in the Ring. There you go, Andre Ward's camp, your manager. You get douchebag of the week in boxing. It was kind of shady. I have to agree with some fight fans out there saying it's really shady. But I understand the tactic move is to get in the head of a Sergey Kovalev because this is a big fight for you guys. And you're trying to have every angle and every advantage against the crusher. So that being said, I get it. It doesn't leave you not being labeled as douchebag of the week in boxing. Felipe Leon, thank you very much. As always, being my little sidekick here on Leaving the Ring, Vato Loco Lives Forever.
The host. The host.
Dave Duenas, myself, the greatest Chicano of all times, and my sidekick,
yes.
Felipe the Jinx Leon.
Chicano, just
hey.
So you guys know, Chicano is Spanish for crossdresser, so
yeah.
There you go. There you go.
Whatever. Anyways, again, guys, enjoy your weekend. Don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer.
Ladies and gentlemen, Thomas y Caballeros.